The presenting sponsor for this episode of the Autism Dad podcast is Mightier. Okay, so I want to take a minute and talk about Mightier. Mightier is a clinically proven mobile gaming app which was developed at Boston Children's Hospital. It's already helped more than 100,000 kids, including my crew here at home. Now, if you're a longtime listener, you know that I'm very big into anything that empowers parents, and that's one of the things that's so great about Mightier. It empowers both parents and kids, and it's all done through play. So how does it work? Great question. Kids play on a tablet or a phone while wearing a heart rate monitor, and Mightier incorporates breathing exercises and other proven calming techniques as part of the game. Kids get to see when it's time to cool down, and they learn how to do it themselves, and parents get to track their progress. With time, those calming skills become muscle memory. All it takes is 15 minutes a day, 3 days a week, and 87% of parents see improvement inside of 90 days. That's amazing. So check out Mightier.com to learn more about the science behind Mightier and how it works. That's Mightier.com and use the promo code TheAutismDad to save 10%. Welcome to the Autism Dad podcast. I'm Rob Gorski, and I have a really interesting show for you guys today. This intro is going to be a little bit longer because the show itself is a little bit shorter, so it'll bounce out. But I wanted to give some background before I get into this interview. At the end of April, I went to my very first autism conference ever. And I've been doing this a long time, and I've been invited a million times. And I just have always said no for, I don't know, a million stupid reasons. But I went this time. And one of the things that I got to do while I was down there was tour a facility, a residential facility for autistic kids. And like, I gotta be honest, like it was a really emotional experience for me, because if you followed my journey, you know, since the beginning, you know, my oldest had a lot of very severe behavioral issues. And there was a point in time where we were looking for residential placement. It's really hard to talk about because I remember how helpless and powerless and how much of a failure I felt like in those moments. And I know there's a lot of parents out there who are going through something similar, who are dealing with behaviors that are so extreme that they can't safely be dealt with inside of the home. And I know what it feels like to have to decide that residential care is the best option. And so as I'm walking through this facility, I'm heartbroken because there's so many kids that need this type of help. But at the same time, it felt good in the sense that there's help out there for kids who need it. You know, one of the reasons why it didn't work out for my son when we needed to place him was because there really wasn't anything available. And there really isn't a lot in the United States for this particular kind of situation. And so when Springbrook Autism Behavioral Health invited me down to the conference, I decided to go ahead and do it because there was part of it was that I really needed to do that to grow personally and professionally and all that. But on the other end of it, I remembered what it was like. I wanted to be able to help parents find a path if this is the direction that they need to go in on their journey right now. So I don't know if any of that made sense, but I really, really struggled a little bit with that part of the conference when I toured that facility, because it brought back so many memories, and it was a rewarding, heartbreaking experience that I hope no one ever needs to experience. But should you need that kind of help for your family, I'm so grateful that someplace like Springbrook is available for our kids and our families. So I was able to sit down. We'll just move on. But it was a roller coaster for me. I was able to sit down with Mike Rowley, who is the administrator of the facility, and just kind of talk to him about why he does what he does, how everything got started, how everything works, what's the point of it, like, you know, messages to parents who might be struggling with this type of thing. And we just have a really honest conversation. I just want to say thank you, Mike, for taking the time to come on the show. Could you just take a minute and give us a little bit about your background and who you are and kind of what you do at Springbrook?
Sure. My name's Mike Rowley. I'm the administrator at Springbrook Autism Behavioral Health. I oversee all of the operations at the facility. I'm a social worker by background, started in therapy back in Utah. I had made some transitions in some administrative work and had done some autism treatment out in the West. And about 10 years ago, I came here to South Carolina. And in February of 13, we opened up our first autism program. So it started out as one unit and then continued to grow as the need and demand for those services are great. Looking at the evidence-based research and trying to fit the right components in the facility to make sure we can meet the needs of the kids and the families and make sure we're seeing them make progress and have an enhanced quality of life in the things that they do.
What got you, I guess, sometimes people are inspired to work. Like I'm doing this because I have three autistic kids.
Sure.
And that was sort of my whatever push into mm-hmm. this type of thing. Was there something like that for you, or what brought you into the field of autism?
Well, I guess there's two things. One, when I was, I come out of a family of social workers, and so we've always been very community based. When I was younger, we used to go in and volunteer time at a what they called then a local care center, and a lot of adults and some kids with some disabilities. So I had some exposure to that early on. It was probably in 2000. The man I worked for at the time, I was running a facility. He asked me to look into doing some more things for autism. His name was Bill Vickers, and he set me aside and said, I'm hearing a lot of needs, unmet needs in our communities. And so he had us take a peek at that. And so the team I had then, we started to attend all kinds of conferences and educate ourselves a little more in the world of autism and opened that program up, and it just kind of grew and grew and grew, and really fell in love with the kids we were treating. So and just had great experiences there, and I just have kind of blossomed into what I'm doing now. So it's wasn't where I thought my career path would go, but it really is, kind of a second love of my life, I guess, outside of my wife, of being able to work with those kids. And over the years, I have six kids, and four of them have already coming up through school. They've all worked in special needs classrooms and had the opportunity to be pretty heavily involved in that and become and do RBTs themselves. And so it's kind of turned into a family commitment and something that we've all really grown into love and do. So.
I'm the oldest of six kids.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
you know that there's never a dull moment.
There's never a dull moment. No. And I didn't appreciate it when I was little. When I was younger, it was a frustrating thing for me because there was so many of us, but as an adult, I really appreciate having a large family and mm-hmm. having that built-in support no matter what, you know, so that's really cool. I toured the facility yesterday. I've never been to a place like that before. How does it feel to be able to provide that resource for parents? Because when I was talking with Dr. Clark yesterday, I mentioned that my oldest is 22, and there was a period of time in his younger years that we needed a facility like that because mm-hmm. We had reached a point where it wasn't safe for him to be at home, and our other kids were paying a price, you know, it just disrupting the whole family. There was going to be a complete collapse, it felt like.
Sure.
And there was nothing that we could send our kids to. And then there's like that emotional hurdle, like as a dad, like, I don't want to send them anywhere because I feel like it's my job. I should be doing better. I should just be stronger or smarter or whatever. But you're providing that resource for families. And I just wondered, like, how does that feel?
You know, it's very, very fulfilling. I mean, that's why I think I've pursued it. And I originally became a social worker because I wanted to help people who needed it. And I think the thing that's really attracted me to autism is you look at how many kids and families are experiencing it. One in 54, I think is the new number I just recently saw. It was 58, and then I saw 54 just recently.
44, I thought now.
Maybe is it 44 now?
I think it might be 44.
So you take that number, one in 44, and if you flip that diagnosis around and turn it into cancer, and we're having one in 44 kids born with cancer, we have cancer centers like we have Starbucks.
Yeah.
But that's the need out there. And not all of them need a level of care
right.
that we're providing. In fact, very few. But all of them need care. And families are desperate for it. And so I think that's when we talk about being, very fulfilling, I think that's probably a catchphrase on, anyone that works with people. But I don't know. There's just a different level of emotional connection, knowing that you're improving quality of life for kids and for parents. Because, they call it the broad spectrum for a reason, right? You've seen one child with autism, you've seen one child with autism, and everybody's going to be different. And for some of our kids that are on the lower end of that spectrum, we can help them learn to brush their teeth and do some more ADLs and some communication. The quality of life for that family is drastically changed. And you have other kids on other units that may have IQs very, very high, but are struggling with a lot of stimulation and a lot of anxiety.
Sensory stuff.
And, if we can get them to develop some of those coping skills and, again, not have the meltdowns and have them learn to communicate and help them through some of those things. It's all about quality of life. Best phone call I think we've ever gotten. We get a lot, but it's one that sticks out to me is we had a mother that had a son discharge. He discharged him from another state, not here in South Carolina, but she called in tears, and we're like, oh, no, what's happened? And I just want to let you know that I just had a bike ride with my son I thought I'd never have again. And that's quality of life, right?
I mean,
those are things that you...
Poor memories.
Yeah, and the things that you think that you... I've lost that with my child. I won't have a chance to do that. To have those moments back again. I mean, like I say, this is that strong emotional connection to
that's
know that it's
feel
not...
really good.
Yeah, you're changing family systems, and you know that because you have three kids and there can be a domino effect on how it affects everybody. In any family that can be that way.
But. Yeah. There is an emotional hurdle because, I remember a therapist used to tell us like he needed to be placed to get the help that he needed that we couldn't give him at home. But that if we didn't, then we risk the collapse of the entire family.
Right.
And when they're telling you to focus on the needs of the many or the needs of the few, that's really hard to take when it's one of your kids.
Oh yeah.
You know? And, I was walking through the facility yesterday, I had a really hard time emotionally because it took me back mm-hmm. to where my oldest was all those years ago. And you see these kids that are just, they're happy, I think, for the most part, but they struggle mm-hmm. with everyday life things that most of us take for granted.
Right.
And I saw there was one kid that reminded me of my youngest, and I had a really hard time. We kind of stopped and we were talking with them for a little bit, and he was telling us about snacks that were late, or he thought they were late or something.
Yeah, sure.
And that's totally my youngest.
Yeah.
That's totally my youngest on that schedule and everything. And it was just, it's hard to see the kids that need that kind of help, but it's good to know that they're in a place where they can get it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a mixed, it was kind of an emotional roller coaster for me.
Right. No, for sure. And it's, I've always said kids belong at home, but if they can't, and really that they can, then there's a nice, it's good to have a place where they can come short term and then let's get them back in the home again. And again, so they can experience a different quality of life, a higher quality of life is what we always hope for. So.
And when I was talking with Dr. Clark yesterday, we were talking about sort of the process and the goal is it's not long-term like permanent placement.
Right.
It sort of serves a dual purpose, right? Like they go through the 28-day intake.
Yeah.
So then you actually have a better idea of what's actually going on so that you can identify if there's comorbid things that are at play or if it's even autism at all, because a lot of things can mimic that, whether it's medication related or what kind of changes need to be made. I've only experienced with my young, with my oldest, like 5 days at a facility or something where they try to tweak his meds or they try and unravel all these things that you just can't do in five days. And, I thought that was, I was really impressed with that, that amount of time. All right, real quick break. Starting something new. I'm going to start dropping trailers for podcasts that I'm really a big fan of. And I got a couple of friends named Brian and Sean. They have a podcast called Just Two Dads. They're absolutely hilarious. Once you guys start listening to them, you're never going to want to stop. So you have been warned. Here's a trailer. Enjoy. Make sure you guys check them out.
Hi, I'm Sean Francis.
And I'm Brian Altunian.
And together,
we are
just two dads.
It's just, that doesn't, I don't, we're not professionals, obviously. We know what we're doing.
This is real as it gets. Anyway, we are Just Two Dads, and we have a weekly podcast, anywhere you get podcasts, where we talk about different issues that affect the special needs community, especially when it comes to raising a child and from a dad's perspective.
Look, at you're watching the stopwatch and you want to make sure that we get this all in 30 seconds. You can catch us live every week on Facebook, or you can catch us on our YouTube channel under We Are Just Two Dads, or podcasts wherever you get podcasts. Hope that you'll catch us weekly on Just Two Dads.
See you then.
Yeah, when we looked at that, because we were building this facility and we were truly trying to put it together, because, and we looked at what we could expect for the average length of stay, and the average length of stay for a child on the spectrum in a neurotypical acute program is about 120 days, and they're not always getting better; they're more just aging out of that program. And they use the term, they're at baseline. This is just how their behaviors are, and we can't impact them and end up discharging them. But on facilities that were acute units that were put together just for kids on the spectrum, that dropped to about 35 days. And we thought, gosh, in 35 days, 28 to 35 days, we could do a lot of work with the kids. And we thought we could do a complete speech workup, complete occupational therapy, special education, get behavior plans written. And get these assessments done with recommendations for continued care. Because one of the biggest challenges sometimes parents face is qualifying for services because they can't get the assessment done. It's trying to get good assessment work done so they can qualify for whatever their insurance or the Medicaid program or whatever the waiver program they might be involved in. And so being able to put something like that together for them, really we thought that we can do so much more than just stabilize a behavior, that we can give the family a roadmap moving forward, kind of a blueprint is what we call it, to help them see where they need to go. But really a blueprint roadmap on how you should continue to move forward and what you need to do to meet your child's needs. And those are things you could take into an IEP meeting and say, I know that you only are saying my child qualifies for this, but here's a 3-inch binder of all the things my child qualifies for, and we need to figure out how to get that done. Or again, talking to local insurances or the waiver programs, getting them into the right programs, because there's still too much cookie cutter type of interventions. And in order to give that kind of that kind of workup with that many interventions in it, or that many assessments in it, is really we hope it's an invaluable toolkit to parents as they continue to try to treat their kids. And then again, at the end of that 28 days, the goal is to get them back with their parents, back into their homes, back into their communities, and give them that next chance at, not only are their meds a little more stabilized, because they have great doctors that are working with them, but have a toolkit to go out and help.
And it gives the parents some recoup time. Like they can build themselves back up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it gives those kids a chance to sort of learn some skills for themselves to better cope with everyday life.
Yep.
And then they can come back together in a situation that's better than what it was when they left.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing. Why is there not more of these places
I guess it's just not easy.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we lack providers, and I think it's outside of people's comfort zones, right? I mean, people in mental health and behavioral health, they kind of get used to doing what they're doing, I guess. And they get into a pattern of what they're doing. And so you see these behavioral health companies that are used to the neurotypical population while missing a really strong need. But if you don't know what you're doing and you don't really it's outside your comfort zone. And to get out of your comfort zone, you're really going to have to roll up your sleeves and understand how to meet the needs. Because you can't just put a child in a facility and let them sit and say, oh, yeah, we treat autism. At least you shouldn't, without having all the evidence-based research, without going in. And there is some risk to it. I mean, because there's not many people doing it, it's hard to point to it and say, well, this is something that's going to be successful. But we're very successful with it and feel like we have really good outcomes with the kids. But you do have to get dedicated and know the interventions and know that you have to have BCBAs as part of your program. You know that you have to have speech as part of your program and occupational therapy, and you're going to have to do everything you can do from a special education standpoint. And so it is a little more difficult to do. Worth it. And there's still funding. I mean, there's lots of advocacy work to do. When you add all those components and then we increase our direct care staffing, and, you know, we're trying to help them get different training to make sure they're up to speed on the kids they're working with and they can read behavior plans and do all those things. And so we have there's a higher cost as you add all those people into that mix, and states need to understand that, you know, that's what it's going to take. And sometimes it just doesn't get the, like I say, lots of advocacy to continue to funnel money to those kids and make sure it's being used in the right ways and make sure that facilities that say they're doing it are doing it the right way and doing it in a way that produces good outcomes. But I think that, you know, it's trying to be that advocacy is part of the reason we do Converge, is to continue to raise awareness, to also provide good training. But, you know, we need, as a facility that treats, we need parents just like parents, you know, at times will maybe need us, but we all need to work together to be a stronger voice to try to help get the finances needed. So.
And my last question is, where do you want to see, you guys have 73 beds now?
So we have 73 residential beds, and those are a little longer term.
Okay.
For kids that are really, really struggling. And then we have 18 acute beds.
Okay. Where do you want to see, what do you want to see Springbrook grow into, like, is going forward?
Yeah, well, I guess what I would really hope for is that we can get into a continuum of care. I'm not comparing us to the Mayo Clinic when I say this, but this is the model I would like to see it grow to as we go. Is in the past, if you wanted to go to the Mayo Clinic, there was only one Mayo Clinic, and that's the only place you could get into, and it was very difficult to get into. But they realized that demand was there and the need was there, and the more they could kind of spread that out, the greater knowledge base they had in the field of medicine and the things that they were treating. And I think that Springbrook, what I'd really like to see Springbrook do is put together regional centers across the United States that kids can get into and families can easily get to. We do have kids from all over the United States.
And I know, I heard like Alaska even. Like,
sure, yeah. We have a couple of people from Alaska here in our conference today. But that's very difficult. And, you know, the hope is, but we have them from a majority of the states have referred in. But it's really hard. It's hard enough to put your child in a facility. It's even harder to say, I can't drive to that facility.
Yeah, or you're separated by.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I think, the one place that we had looked at was in the Cleveland area, which is about an hour north of where I'm at, mm-hmm. Ohio. And that felt like forever.
Sure.
Like, that's too far of a drive. Like, if something happens, we need right. to be there, like, now. I can't imagine being in Alaska and knowing my kid is in South Carolina.
Right.
I mean, that's not an easy... I mean, it's a 14-hour flight from Ohio
right.
to here, which is crazy because it's a 10-hour drive. But I'm glad to know that there's help out there for the kids that need it. It's heartbreaking to know that the kids need it.
Right.
But I'm glad to know that it's available.
Sure.
You know, and that was sort of my takeaway from yesterday, was just there's help for parents who probably don't realize that it's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, my hope is that if there's somebody out there who needs this type of intervention, this type of help for their child, now you know that there is a place that you can do that.
Right.
You know, and I think that knowledge is enough to maybe inspire some hope that, look, we can start looking into this and we could start, it's a path forward.
Sure.
You know, and when you're spinning your wheels, desperate, not knowing how you're going to survive the next day.
Right.
Having something like that as a light at the end of the tunnel is a very powerful thing. So, I was impressed with what I saw, and the kids were amazing. They really are. And it was a good experience.
Yeah. The kids are amazing. And the staff, particularly our frontline staff. I mean, they do great work, and from our professional and clinical support that come in, you know, we try to bring in the best staff we can and recruit from around the country to try to find them. Mm-hmm. It's a good group of people that do
really good work. So. We saw some interventions that were taking place that were kind of off to the side that they didn't know that we were there. Mm-hmm. And that's always interesting because you don't know.
Yeah.
It's what they do when you're not watching. Right. But it's how I would work with my kid, you know, like, just patient and kind, and it was a very emotional roller coaster for me yesterday. But I'm glad that you guys exist and that you're helping kids, and hopefully we can spread the word so that people know that there are resources out there if you are in a position where you need this type of intervention.
Yeah, and we hope that no parent has to.
Yeah,
but again, in the cases that it does, that
there needs to be a place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you. Appreciate your advocacy and the things you're doing for the autism community.
Yeah, and I'm glad to know that there's a place. I get asked about stuff like this all the time, and I'm like, I have no idea. In fact, I was just talking on I have a subreddit. It's like 9,000 families, and someone was just talking about looking for a place, and I was like, you're not going to believe it. I just toured this place yesterday, and I'll send them a link. And so there's people looking, and they just have no idea.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can provide them with some knowledge and see what happens.
Oh, we appreciate that. And again, appreciate the work you do. So,
well, thank you. You have a great day.
You too.
Before I close things out today, I want to say a couple of things, actually. First of all, thank you, Mike, for coming on the show and talking to us about Springbrook and everything that you do and your background and your family and all of that stuff. Thank you for having an honest conversation about the process and what it means and how it works and all of that stuff. There are so many families out there who are in need of this type of service for their child and don't know where to go, because it's not widely available. There is an onslaught of emotions that become roadblocks for things like this. I remember feeling guilt and shame and fear. And, you know, I mentioned before, like, I felt like a failure as a parent and just all of these things that that played a role in influencing one of the most difficult decisions that I've ever had to make in my life. And thankfully, my oldest is doing amazing now. I mean, we no longer need anything like this. But there's a lot of families out there who do. And my hope is that by having this difficult conversation, it connects with someone who needs to hear it. So again, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Springbrook, for inviting me down. I really appreciate the experience. I look forward to returning next year. All of Springbrook's information will be in the show notes below should anybody need to reach out and contact them as well. So as for me, you can find me at theautismdad.com. All my social links are at the top of the page. Also, I have a support forum for autism parents. It's got 9,500 families in it right now. And I also opened up a discussion forum for the podcast because people were wanting to know how they can leave comments and feedback and stuff like that. And so I created a place for you to have a conversation about this episode and, you know, previous episodes and future episodes. You can share your opinions and thoughts on topics and guests and all that kind of stuff, you know. So I appreciate your feedback. So there'll be links to that at my blog as well, and also in the show notes below, so you guys can to check that out. So I hope you guys have a fantastic week. Be smart. Make good choices, right? Right? Make good choices. That's what I always tell my kids anyways. I'll talk to you next Monday. All right. We'll see you later. Bye.